Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, First Canto, Chapter 14, Text 10. Pasyo Patanara Vyagra. Pasyo Patanara Vyagra. Divyan Bomam Sadaihikan. Divyan Bomam Sadaihikam. Darunam Samsato Durad. Darunan Samsato Durad. Bayam no buddhi mohanam. Bayam no buddhi mohanam. Pasyo patanara vyagra. Divyan bomam sadaihikan. Darunan samsato durad. Bayam no buddhi mohanam. Vaishnavis. Pasya, just see, utpatan, disturbances, nada vyagra, O man of tiger-like strength, divyan, happenings in the sky, or by planetary influence, boman, happenings on the earth, sadaihikan, happenings of the body and the mind, darunan, awfully dangerous, samsata, indicating, adurat, in the near future. Bayam, danger. Na, hour. Buddhi, intelligence. Mohanam, deluding. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Just see, O man, with a tiger's strength, how many miseries due to celestial influences, earthly reactions, and bodily pains, all very dangerous in themselves, are foreboding danger in the near future by deluding our intelligence. Purport. Material advancement of civilization means advancement of the reactions of the threefold miseries due to celestial influence, earthly reactions, and bodily or mental pains. By the celestial influence of the stars, there are many calamities like excessive heat, cold, rains, or no rains, and the after effects are famine, disease, and epidemic. The aggregate result is agony of the body and the mind. Man-made material science cannot do anything to counteract the threefold miseries. They are all punishments from the superior energy of Maya under the direction of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, our constant touch with the Lord by devotional service can give us relief without our being disturbed in the discharge of our human duties. The Asuras, however, do not believe in the existence of God. The Asuras, however, who do not believe in the existence of God, make their own plans to counteract all these threefold miseries, and so they meet with failures every time. The Bhagavad Gita 7.14 clearly states that the reaction of material energy is never to be conquered because of the binding effects of the three modes. They can simply be overcome by one who surrenders fully in devotion under the lotus feet of the Lord. Om Aginata Madandasha Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshuram Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Swaparantikam. So, Krishna Bahir Mukha Jeev Bhogavanchakade Nikatishta Mayatade Japati Adade is a verse by Jagadananda Pandit. I think it appears in the Prema Vivarta Vilas. And it's saying that Krishna Bahir Mukha Ji, the living entity, he turns his back on Krishna. Bahir Mukha means he shows him the back of his head, so to speak, or the back of his face. Bhogavanchaka, and he goes after sense enjoyment. Nikatishta Mayata, he's slapped down, he's tackled. Nikatishta Mayatade Japati Adade. Prabhupada's the different times he quoted this verse and he described it in different ways. It's imagine somebody being tackled, like in a football tackle. It's like that. Embraced. So that's what happens. And so that's kind of what's being described here. See, the idea is that the human form of life is being given to the living entity for God realization. Right? And people, human beings, who aren't using it for that purpose, they're like, as described in that verse, turning their back on Krishna. Krishna's arrangement is, hey, you're supposed to use this human form of life to try to, understand who you are and who I am and what our relationship is and like that. But the human race is saying, by and large, and as Kali Yuga progresses, is saying, no, we want to pursue sense gratification. So the thing is this, that, Krishna is in control. It's just like, imagine you're the king of a kingdom, okay? And you have, and you're, like not like a figurehead, but you're actually completely in control. And you have certain subjects who are trying to, act contrary to your program. So, you discipline them, right? And then they still, the way they respond is they become even more rebellious. So you're going to discipline them even further, right? And if they become more rebellious, then you're going to go, who's going to win? In that competition, who's going to win? The rebellious subjects or the king who has complete control, right? So it's like that. Krishna's in complete control. Maya jakshena prakrite suyate sacharacharam hetu nanena kunteya jagad viparibartate. Krishna's in control of the material energy. Krishna's in control of Maya. And when he sees the living entities are not using their human form of life for the way it's supposed to be used, he sends these miseries. It's like his way of saying, hey, guys, come on. You're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. So slap, slap, slap. Now get with the program. And if the, you know, if the living entities go, no, no. You know, they want to dig their heels in and be stubborn. No, we're going to continue pursuing material enjoyment. Then Krishna goes, okay, well, I've got to turn it up now. And that's what's happening. He turns it up and it gets worse. And it's not rocket science, as I said, to understand who's going to win in that competition. You know, Krishna's, you know, the living entities are not going to prevail. They're not going to come out on top. Despite all the man-made material science, as it says here, Prabhupada says, this man-made material science cannot do anything to counteract these threefold miseries. Because it's a superior. You know, just, and Prabhupada, towards the end of the purport, quotes this the famous verse from the seventh chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. This energy of mine, consisting of the three modes of material nature, it's a divine energy because it's originally emanating from Krishna. It's dharachaya. It's virtually insurmountable. Prabhupada sometimes translates it very difficult to overcome or insurmountable. You can't win. You can't, just like it said, you can't fight City Hall. It's kind of like that, you know. So that's the situation. But unfortunately, the non-devotees, due to being deluded, you know, mogasha moga karmano, moga jnana vichaita saha, raksha sima sudim chaiva, prakatim mohinim shara, shita, that, you know, due to the fact that they have this atheistic mentality, they're, all their fruitive activities, their hopes for liberation and cultivation of knowledge, it's all defeated. You know, they're deluded. They can't see it. Whereas devotees can see it very simply and very clearly. For devotees, it's a no-brainer what's going on. You know, people are becoming more rebellious, and Krishna's disciplining them more in hopes that they're going to wake up and understand what's going on and, you know, start using the human form of life in the right way. But unfortunately, generally speaking, that's not what goes on, so Krishna keeps turning it up. And that's what happens throughout Kali Yuga. But anyway, so that's the situation for the non-devotees. And Prabhupada mentions here that Bhagavad Gita clearly states that the reaction of material energy is never to be conquered because of the binding effects of the three modes. They can simply be overcome by one who surrenders fully in devotion under the lotus feet of the Lord. So devotees, we surrender to the lotus feet of the Lord, and the reactions, they kind of, they're overcome and they're not overcome. They're overcome in the sense that, well, you know, we're here and we're engaging in devotional service. And despite things that are going on a, you know, worldly level and even on a personal level, which is the point I'm trying to get to, that, you know, devotees shouldn't think that, okay, I'm going to surrender to Krishna, and because I'm surrendered to Krishna, I'm going to be free from, totally free from adiatmic, adibhotic, and adidaivic miseries. Now, that might happen, that could happen, if you really surrender to Krishna 100% and you really get the mercy, you know, then you can, yeah, you could be elevated to the transcendental platform. And, I mean, it's not like it's impossible. It could happen that you become totally free from those miseries. But more often than not, what happens is we see that, you know, devotees surrender and they're still, to some degree or another, affected by those miseries. I mean, until you get to the highest level of devotional service, you know, you're going to be proportionately, I mean, to the, you know, as you're, you know, the least less advanced you are, the more you're still going to feel the pinching of those miseries. It's not until you get to the highest level. There's one verse in the, it's quoted in the Nectar Devotion where Lord Shiva is talking to his wife and he says that, he's talking about the highest level devotee. He doesn't even perceive the happiness and distress in relation to the body. But, you know, in our case, yeah, we're still, it's still there to a greater or lesser degree. But, you know, that's okay. That's not a sign that you're doing anything wrong. That's just a sign that you haven't, you know, made advance to the level where that just doesn't be, is not an issue at all whatsoever. And there's there's many, many verses that address this throughout the Bhagavatam. Probably the most famous one is found in the 10th canto, 14th chapter, text number 8, where I think it's Lord Brahma is speaking, and he says, Tatenu kampam susumikshamano bunjana evatma kritam vipakam. Ridvag vipabur vidananamaste. What? Ridvag vapubir vidananamaste. Jiveta yo mukti sade padayabak. Right. And the gist of that verse is that, you know, Lord Brahma is saying that one who, you know, while he's trying to engage in your devotional service, he tolerates the different, you know, trials and tribulations that are still coming his way due to not being totally free from all the reactions to his past sinful activities, but who continues in his devotional service with the right attitude, you know, offering you obeisances from the core of his heart with body, mind, and words. Then that person, by doing that, by that attitude and by that program, becomes qualified to be elevated ultimately back to the spiritual world. Just like a son, all a son has to do to inherit the property of his father is stay alive. See, so it's just somebody, if you just stay alive in devotional service, which means just keep going, keep performing, keep practicing, then that's your ticket. You know, that's your qualification for being eligible to go back home, back to Godhead. And there's another nice verse in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, which kind of like helps us understand this even more. It goes, Yat sarvatra nabishnehas tat tat prapya subashubam nabinandanti nadvesti tasya pragya pratishtita. It's talking about how a person who's not disturbed by good and evil. You know, this is actually in the part of the second chapter where Arjuna asks Krishna about the what are the symptoms of a man whose consciousness is merged in transcendence. How does he speak? What is his language? How does he sit? How does he walk? And this is one, two, the third thing Krishna says in response to Arjuna's question. So he makes that point about how, you know, a person situated in transcendence, he's not disturbed by the good and evil that comes his way. He doesn't despise the evil, you know, the undesirable things, and he doesn't rejoice, or he's not elated by the desirable things that might come his way. And Prabhupada says in the Purport that this material world is a place of upheavals. That's the nature of it. There's going to be upheavals. And there's upheavals even in the lives of devotees, right? But you just have to weather the storm. You know, you have to learn how to weather the storm. It doesn't say that, you know, the upheavals don't go away. You just got to hang on there and weather the storm. And, you know, that's the qualification. I have a really nice story to illustrate that point. Back in 2007, there was a man that came through. He was actually like a congregational members, an Indian man, Shastrakrit was cultivating him. And it worked out, maybe Archita might remember him. He was coming to the temple, and he had just been installed as the captain of a Japanese oil tanker, which was the size of a football field, literally. And he had just brought it over from Japan. You know, they had a big ceremony for him over there when they kind of, I guess he was some sort of advanced navigational engineer or something like that. He got the job. He was an Indian, but they gave it to him. He was in charge of that whole thing, and he brought it over, and it was parked. He had it docked, in the Long Island, it's not Long Island, Long Beach Pier, okay? And so Shastrakrit made an arrangement, you know, he agreed that, yeah, bring the devotees. We'll let them see the whole thing. So, at that time, it was shortly after I got that motorhome that you might have, it's in the parking lot there. So we packed about 20 devotees in that thing, right? And we drove down there and we went on the tanker. As I said, it was literally the size of a football field. And he showed us around, you know, and he took us up to the bridge. And the bridge, which is the control room, was probably about half the size of the altar. It was that big, you know, with that many different gadgets and, you know, dials and this and that. You know, I mean, it was bewildering just looking at it, what to speak of thinking about how to use it all. Anyway, to get to the point was, and then after that he took us into his cabin, you know, where he would stay for most of the trip. And the whole thing was, it just was maiden voyage was coming from Japan to here. So everything was like brand new. It was still like all shiny practically, you know. It was like state of the art. So we're in his cabin and I'm looking around and everything was like, you know, really just pucker. But then I noticed something. I can't remember what it was, but there was something that was like really smashed, you know. And I thought, what? And it didn't, you know, just didn't fit in. I said, what? What's that? He said, how's that? He said, oh. He said, you know, when on the way over, because you know they came from like northern Pacific around Korea or something like that. He said the swells, you know, the swells in the ocean sometimes get to like 80 feet, and you know it's not Pacific. It's not peaceful in the North Pacific. And he said, the only thing we have to do is I come here to the cabin, I belt myself in. He belts himself in because, you know, the pitch and the whatever the other word is, I can't remember, pitch and trough or something. Huh? Yeah, pitch and yaw, thank you. The pitch and yaw is so much that if you're just trying to stand there and brace yourself, you can't even do it. They have to belt themselves in. And, you know, it was the first voyage. They were just not used to, you know, they didn't know the vessel that well. And so obviously there was something loose. And during the pitching and the hawing, you know, during the 80-foot swell, something just kind of like, you know, just flew out of wherever it's supposed to be, you know, where it was, and just smashed into something else and broke it. And they just got here and they hadn't even had a chance to even fix it yet. So, you know, that's the nature of the material world. It could be smooth. Like Papa had a smooth passage, he said. He was very grateful for that. He thanked Krishna for having that smooth passage on the Atlantic when he came over. And, you know, I think in one poem he actually said, if the Atlantic had actually shown its normal face, that might have been the end of me. Because he had two heart attacks. I don't know if I would have been able to take it, but it was very, Krishna had arranged for a very smooth patch. But, you know, at any moment, when you're in the ocean, that's the nature of the ocean. It can get rough. It can get turbulent. So same thing in the material world. And the devotee just has to be able to, as I said, weather the storm. You know, what they did in that boat, they went as far as to strap themselves in. You see? So, of course, this is a very dramatic example of, you know, this point. But a lot of times the application is in our own lives is not so dramatic. Like I'll give you an example. Like this morning, for instance, I was sitting here in the temple room chanting japa in front of Tulsi, and which is a big part of the reason why I try to chant japa here in the Tulsi temple room, because, you know, there's this one purport I always remember where Prabhupada talks about how it's in that chapter in the Anchalila Volume 3, I think it's text 100, and it's talking about Haridas Thakur, how he would chant 300,000 names daily. And Prabhupada says in the second paragraph of that purport, he says, you know, Haridas Thakur, he was a Mukta Purush, you know, eternally liberated soul, and he could do that, he said, but we shouldn't imitate him. But he said, but we can try to follow in his footsteps. He said, chanting 16 rounds in front of Tulsi, chanting 16 rounds of the Hare Krishna mantra and worshiping Tulsi, he said, is so powerful that simply by doing that, one can become spiritually strong. And he said, so therefore we request the members of the Krishna consciousness movement to follow Haridas Thakur's example very rigidly. Chanting 16 rounds does not take much time, nor is worshiping the Tulsi plant difficult. And then he concludes that paragraph by saying, the process has immense spiritual potency. One should not miss this opportunity. So, you know, I mean, if you just stop and think about it, here's the, you know, our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, who we're accepting as, you know, Shakshat Dadit Vena Asama, you know, the external manifestation of the Super Soul. He's saying that this process has immense spiritual potency. One should not miss the opportunity. So, something to think about. So, anyway, so I was sitting there chanting, and my mind was saying, you are wasting your time. You're not getting anything out of this. You're just wasting your time. You know, can't we just do something different? And So I just said to my mind, and this is like an application of, you know, in everyday life, weathering the storm. I just said, you know, mind, shut up. You don't know what you're talking about. Like following in the footsteps of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, who said you have to, in the morning, you have to beat your mind with a broom 100 times. And then in the evening, you have to beat it with a shoe 100 times. You have to beat your mind into submission. That's the practical application of this point of that, you know, you have to be, weather the storm. You have to not be disturbed by the good and evil and just keep going with your devotional service. Part of that, a very significant part of that, is just making that decision to try to beat your mind into submission. And of course, I mean, my understanding of what he meant by the broomstick and the shoe is that, you know, you have to follow the regulative principles of devotional service. When we come to the temple room in the morning, when you get up and you put yourself in that shower, you pay your obeisances, that all those things are beating your mind with the broomstick. You know, cold shower, broomstick, paying your obeisances, broomstick. Standing there and, you know, even if the person doesn't sing that well, through Mangalarti, broomstick, you know, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you know. That's beating your mind with the broomstick 100 times, and you got to do that. So anyway, getting back to the battle between me and my mind this morning, so my mind sat down. I said, shut up, mind, you don't know what you're talking about. And my mind didn't shut up. It said, well, can we at least go into the kitchen and get an orange and, you know, suck out the juice of an orange? I mean, that's not, how big? And I said, well, it's, you know, and I could see it wasn't going to give up. So I said, okay, look, I'll tell you what, mind, I'll make you a deal. Let's just chant now till 7 o'clock. You know, let's just stay here in Castino. Let's just do this until 7 o'clock. And then after that, whatever you want to do, like I'll entertain all proposals. In the mood of Haridas Thakur. Haridas Thakur, if you remember that pastime, you know, he did a bait and switch. You have to use different strategies. Rupa Goswami said, Yena Tena Prakadena Manakrishna Navesayat, that in the beginning, somehow or another, you know, you have to somehow or another engage that mind in Krishna's service. So you have to, you know, sometimes we have to employ different strategies. So if the broom and the shoe don't work, you know, the beating the mind and submission don't work, then you could try the Haridas Thakur program, which was bait and switch. Just to refresh everybody's memory, you know, Haridas Thakur was chanting, and he had his program there in Benapol, I think it was, and he was chanting, and you know, Ramachandra Khan, he became envious. Ramachandra Khan, and he employed some prostitutes to try to defame Haridas Thakur like that. So when the prostitute went there and she, you know, made her proposal. And Haridas Thakur, he said, oh, yeah, sure, yeah. You know, I've taken this vow to do this chanting, and I have to complete it. And then we could enjoy in full freedom like that. Now, Haridas Thakur had no intention at all at any point in time of, you know, doing anything, you know, with that prostitute. It was a whole, with him, it was totally a bait and switch. He knew, okay, I'm going to agree to her proposal, and she's going to sit here and hear the chanting, and he knew what was going to happen. She's going to get purified hearing the chanting, and as a result, she's going to change. She's going to become transformed, and sure enough, that's what happened. So that was, you know, a strategy. So we can use that on our own minds. You know, you have to sometimes make a deal. But the point is that somehow or another, we have to just kind of keep going in devotional service. And as I, you know, pointed out earlier in the class, that, you know, Jiveta Yo Mukti Pade Sadaya Bhak, that's the qualification. If we just, you know, become committed to that program, that somehow or another, whatever it takes, if it takes the broomstick and the shoe, or if it takes the bait and this, whatever, I'm going to figure out a way to kind of keep myself engaged in devotional service, keep on going. And if we do that, if we're committed to that, then the result will be, you know, Jiveta Yo Mukti Pade Sadaya Bhak, that we become, as Prabhupada translate here? If you continue offering your respectful obeisance with the heart, the words, you're surely eligible for liberation. It has become your rightful claim. You see, so that's how we become the rightful claimants of the mercy of Krishna by just persevering and not allowing ourselves to get discouraged. And I mean, let's take a worst case scenario, okay? You know, for a devotee. Worst case scenario is this, that you engage in devotional service for your whole lifetime, 50 years or more, you know, 60, whatever, you know, and you make very, very little advancement, practically negligible advancement, unfortunately. Okay? Worst case scenario, what happens is, you won't go back to Godhead. You leave the body, but you take birth again as a human being. That's guaranteed. And also, you'll take up from where you left off. So, you know, it's not as good as going back to Godhead, but it's a lot better than nothing. I mean, that's pretty good. You know, at least, you know, you're guaranteed. So even if, I mean, worst case scenario for a devotee is that you try, and you're not, for some reason or another, whatever, you're not very successful. But you take birth as a human being, and you get a chance, and you'll take up from where you left off. So that's not really that bad. So no matter how you slice it, trying to, you know, dedicating our lives to try to be devotees and do the best we can really is the best program. And there's a lot more that could be said on this subject, but there's not a lot more time. So I'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions or comments about any of these points? Okay, Radha Krishna. Whatever.
Take a moment to become advanced in Krishna consciousness.
You know what? I'm going to let somebody else answer that because I've thought about that too, and I've never really felt like I got a real good realization. You know, nothing came to me. I don't think I could say anything intelligent in response to that. So perhaps Archita or Mataji would like to say something on that, answer that question. What does it mean that, you know, Prabhupada says you could take a moment to become Krishna conscious, or it could be a lifetime? How do you become Krishna conscious in a moment?
But ultimately, Krishna is the one who removes the covering of Maya. We're all by nature pure. So it's not some surprise, oh, this person has become a pure devotee. No, you are by nature a pure devotee. But because we've turned away, like you said, Krishna by Mukha, we have turned away from Krishna, therefore we become covered by Maya. So Krishna can, at a moment, remove that covering. And usually it happens by, in our case, sadhana. By practicing sadhana properly, Krishna becomes pleased and he removes the covering. But Prabhupada said there's also kripa. Kripa means you don't really deserve it 100%, but by the mercy of Krishna or Krishna's pure devotee, the coverings can be removed.
Okay. And Mata.
It is true, it is by mercy, but also our endeavor. So according to the purport, after Prabhupada makes that statement, it may take a moment. He also says it is a matter of understanding and accepting the fact. So on our part, we have to understand I'm a servant of Krishna. But not only theoretical understanding, we have to accept, which means we have to make some endeavor to serve Krishna. And so as soon as we understand I'm a servant of Krishna, and then we try to make that endeavor, then the mercy will come also.
Yeah, it will happen at some moment. It might not be the moment that we're hoping for, but eventually at some moment, Krishna will remove that covering. Yeah, Archita.
She got transformed into a pure devotee.
Yeah.
You don't read that she had to go out to the Himalayas and, you know, no. She pleased Krishna. When Krishna went to Mathura, she pleased immediately. She became pure enough to associate with Krishna directly.
Right, that's a great example. Yeah, that's a great example.
Yeah, it can happen. It can happen. It's just
would Maharaj Katvanga be another example of that?
Yeah, well, he was a devotee
in
advance. He was a sadhaka. But in Kubja's case, we don't have any reference of her being a sadhaka. She was a servant of Kansa, the enemy, who was inimical to Krishna. And just opposite the washerman was also a servant, of Kamsa, but he didn't comply when Krishna asked for the clothes. He chastised Krishna. How dare you want the king's clothes? I said, so he lost his head. Literally, Krishna cut his head off. But in Kubja's case, she satisfied Krishna, and Krishna liberated her in a moment. So it can happen. Yes, the endeavor has to be there, but the mercy part is there. Because even if the endeavor is not perfect, like Prabhupada said, one devotee on a morning walk asked Prabhupada to explain what is Kripa City. And Prabhupada explained like that you don't really deserve. And not only do you not deserve, you don't even really want. It's like if I have money and I offer it to you and you don't take it and I stuff it in your pocket. I say, take it, and I push it in your pocket.
Which is what Prabhupada said.
Yeah.
Anybody else have anything they'd like to say? Yeah, Mata.
Thank you. I'd just like to comment about beating the mind in the morning and the evening. Maybe it's just me, but it seems like, isn't that like when the mind is the most obnoxious? Like in the morning, you can think all kinds of crazy thoughts. Or in the evening, after a long day, you just want to kick back, enjoy. So it's like, it seems it's a crucial time to really get heavy.
Yeah, it's probably why Bhakti Siddhanta specifically mentioned those two times a day, you know, in the morning and the evening. Yeah, anybody else, anything they'd like to say? Okay, thank you very much. Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Okay. Yeah, that's nice.